This is The Guardian.
Today, sex, drugs, and a bad business plan. Why Vice went bust. Just so you know, there is some swearing in this episode.
Today in Focus is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honour of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organisation, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat, but Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/earthday this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
I mean, I guess currently we still are.
Yeah,
at the moment that we record this, we are technically still employed.
It is Friday at 11 a.m. and currently I think we're all still employed.
Yeah, so just to set the scene here.
What you're hearing is the last episode of Vice's cyber podcast. It's not the ending that the company's management would have wanted. Five journalists who work for Vice on a Vice podcast explaining why they suddenly no longer work for Vice.
I still have access to upload a podcast, so we're doing a rogue podcast going out the door to sit and bitch and reminisce about our time at Vice.
At the end of February, Vice Media sent a note to its staff announcing that they wouldn't be publishing on the website anymore. Hundreds of people would lose their jobs. And a news organisation that, for the past 30 years, has provided some of the most daring, honest, and sometimes grotesque stories, was effectively dead.
We've been living under the clouds of, like, a great bloodletting for years now.
Yeah, it wasn't a question of if, it was a question of when.
Still sucks.
Yeah, it's still awful.
The company's long been in trouble. Not for its journalism, which has won the biggest documentary and news awards in the world, but for the way it was being run. The allegations of sexual assault, the bad investments, years of layoffs, and eventual bankruptcy had made working there increasingly difficult. For a good time in the noughties and the 2010s, Vice captured the zeitgeist. But maybe it was never going to be forever.
You know, the illusion that the internet is forever was really tempting, but I think it's really important for people to not have any illusions about that. It's not.
It's incredible how temporary it's become and how fast silicon degrades compared to paper.
From The Guardian, I'm Hannah Moore. Today in Focus, how Vice changed the media and why it couldn't last. Sam Wolfson, you're features editor for Guardian US, and you're in New York now. I know you used to work for Vice in London for years. How did you start there?
I actually started when I was still in secondary school as a teenager.
Right.
I can't remember exactly what it was that got me through the door. I maybe sent a little note or they'd seen something I'd written as a teen. But we basically came to an agreement where I would go to Double Politics on Monday morning at sixth form, and then I would get the bus over to their offices in East London. And at that point, it was sort of 2008, so it was still very much a magazine at that time. I used to pick it up when it was available initially in the UK. It was in kind of skate shops and record shops, and it was just a world of, you know, reporting and music and kind of attitudes and foul language and humor that I just hadn't seen before. So then it was just very thrilling to kind of be in the mix.
What was it like going into that office as a 17-year-old?
There was lots of kind of old furniture. There was a big drawer full of pornography because they were doing porn reviews. There was lots of taxidermy on the walls. And I think they liked having a young teenager around. I remember one of the first things they got me to do was like an investigation into if there's a safe way to open a beer without it spraying up if it's been shaken. So I went to like a house party with my mates and we took loads of photos of like doing the tap on the top method.
Some true scientific testing.
Yeah. And they just liked that there was photographs of 16-year-olds being covered in beer, I think, ultimately. But sometimes I think, you know, being on the front line of that kind of stuff was a bit nervy. I remember at one time there was a story going around that people were stealing hand sanitizer from local hospitals and making moonshine out of it.
So like homemade alcohol?
Homemade alcohol out of kind of your hand sanny. And I remember an editor of the mag at the time coming over and being like, go on, do you want to try that? Do you want to do that? And I was like, no, I don't think I do. But I could probably find some people who would. And so we got sort of all the way down into doing a photo shoot with like a few of my mates where they'd like made hand sanitizer cocktails and done all the props and stuff. Mm. And like where someone had one sip of one. And then I think everyone freaked out and was like, this, even this is a bit of a step too far. And it was aborted. There was definitely a bit of pressure to sort of get mucked in.
Tell me about the founders, the three guys who'd founded it back in Canada in the mid-90s. What were they like as bosses?
There were these three guys, Shane, Gavin and Sarush.
I'm Shane Smith.
I'm Gavin McGinnis.
I'm Sarush Alvey.
We're Vice Magazine and we're moving to New York City!
The youth of North America know Vice. Vice is a household name to them. Everybody else does know us, which is great. We love it that way because, you know, you mentioned our name to anyone over 30 and they go, Vice, never heard of it. Whereas anyone under, you know, 20 is like, Vice, ah! You know, freaking out. So I mean, we could say we're revolutionary and we're the newest thing and we're the best thing ever to come alive. But in reality, we're the new generation's Rolling Stone.
That's the guy.
And I mean, Gavin was the kind of editorial mind behind, I think, the initial Vice and its idea and its kind of humor and comedy and just taking the piss out of everything and sort of liking nothing but critiquing everything and sort of having the same interest in a punk band as you would a Warzone.
Well, I would do like Interview with a Potato, for example, or Interview with God, or most of the attitude of Vice really is this irreverent stupidity.
You know, he was very sort of edgy in his humor. I guess as a teenager, I thought that that kind of stuff was absolutely hilarious, but it always kind of drifted into a sort of on the boundaries of sexism, on the boundaries of racism and homophobia and all that and everything else.
And this is Gavin McInnes, who went on to be a founding member of the Proud Boys.
He was the founder of the Proud Boys, and, you know, it turned out that all this kind of edgy stuff that he was writing wasn't ironic at all.
The irony here is that I'm an egalitarian, I'm an anti-racist, I'm a pro-gay, pro-women's rights individual, the same punk rocker I was when I was 18, but now the Nazi skinheads I'm fighting are you social justice warriors!
And so as he drifted further and further into the far right, Vice kind of did some kind of deal with him where he was taken off the masthead and they didn't mention him and he didn't mention them. And so then it was really down to Shane, and Shane is more of a kind of salesman, you know. Every quote you can read about him in any article about Vice, they call him the master salesman, and that's what he did. So he was in a different kind of realm. He was all about like just saying that it was going to be the next CNN, the next MTV, and opening as many offices as possible.
He was incredible at self-promotion.
Yeah, he did a video once when we reached 2 million YouTube subscribers where he just walked around the office naked and like went over to all the teams and said, what are you working on? That was his idea of a celebration.
Hi, I'm Shane Smith. We're here at the Vice offices in Brooklyn, New York. I'm celebrating. Why? Because we hit 2 million subscribers very quickly, because you're beautiful, and I'm naked. Let's go take a tour.
So yeah, he very much became the face of the company. He interviewed President Obama. He fronted a lot of the documentaries. He hosted the HBO show. But he was minded, I think, very much as a salesman.
So Vice, as I mentioned, started off in Canada as this kind of renegade skate magazine. And then over the years, it reinvented itself several times. Just talk me through its different eras.
It did have these very distinct eras. And so in the 90s and early noughties, where it was being run mostly out of Canada and then New York, it was this very hipster Brooklyn magazine, a lot of skateboarding content.
Yo, what's up? I'm Fat Chew.
Hi, I'm Kat Varnell.
We're in sunny but also shitty Los Angeles, driving around in a basically wildly overmarked van, telling people whether they're dudes
or don't.
Why don't you focus on women a little bit?
And they started to publish around kind of the middle of the noughties, these books with the best of their content, which are quite reflective of what Vice was like in those years. So there was a big book of do's and don'ts, which was one of the big features early on. And those were just like photographs of people at parties or whatever with like a mean joke
hey,
about
wigger.
Them.
Wigger.
That's a do. Is Mazda Miata Japanese for homosexual transporter? That's a do. Well, you came out to LA to work in the film industry and you ended up with a menu balance on your head. That's a don't.
You look like one of those extras on Entourage.
Then there was like the time that I was interning there. Should we call it the middle period, in which they were making very exciting documentaries on a thing that at the time was called VBS, which was their first foray into video. And then they made these like very cool documentaries, like there was Swansea Love Story, which is an amazing story about drug addiction and love in Wales. They made these things like The Vice Guide to North Korea, which was quite famous when Shane Smith went to North Korea and basically like went on the kind of guided propaganda tour, but did some karaoke and mucked about a bit.
Question, are we going to get assassinated for going to talk to the North Koreans?
Quite possibly. People aren't going to be happy to see us, that's for sure.
Why is it that the best stories always take so long to get to?
Because all of the easy to get to ones have been done by programs better than yours.
From 2013 onwards, it was in a process of ongoing and somewhat troubled professionalization, where they were trying to say, okay, we've done these cool things. Can we like scale it? Can we do more serious reporting under this Vice News banner and have war reporters all over the world? Can we make this kind of nightly news program for HBO? Can we make a documentary series for HBO? Can we, you know, move into other fields and music and all of these things? And so there was both externally in terms of the type of content they were making, which still had a kind of youthful edge, but was trying to be just scaled up.
Hey, my name's Braden, and I'm going to the Westminster Dog Show at Madison Square Garden on acid.
And internally, in terms of office culture, this process of like, how do we make this not just a bunch of guys, you know, going to the pub and make this a company that works.
Shirin Kale, you are a features writer for The Guardian now, but you started your career at Vice in 2015. What was it like then?
Well, I was 26 when I turned up at Vice. I was an intern. I'm pretty sure I'm one of the oldest interns they ever had. It was a really interesting time, 2015, because it was at a bit of a crossroads. There was traces of old Vice, which is what everybody at Vice refers to as, you know, the period in the 2000s and 90s and the early 2010s. But 2015 was around the time that executives, you know, co-founder Shane Smith and other senior people at the company were starting to really bring in major investment from corporate companies like Disney. So it was kind of half anarchic, creative, freewheeling, extremely informal place, and half of something that was becoming a more professionalized workplace.
How could you still see the relics of the old Vice?
I mean, it was just informal. It was the only place I've ever worked where I could roll out of bed and pretty much go into the office in what I slept in.
Right.
In the summer, I literally would just turn up there in a baggy t-shirt and shorts and flip-flops. And the parties were pretty wild, I've got to say. I would say there was a lot of drug use, and the drug use was pretty normalized at these parties. I never saw anything happening in the office, but I would not have been slightly surprised if that was taking place. You know, it was a bunch of young, really creative people who went out a lot and liked to party a lot and weren't operating in an environment where they were being particularly monitored or managed. And that's not necessarily a negative thing. I think that's often how really great creativity comes about, but obviously it also sometimes had a negative side.
If you're not a millennial, it might be a little bit difficult to understand, but this brand had so much cultural cachet, right? It was huge.
I mean, look, there was Vice everything. I remember in 2015, Craig David played at our star party. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I remember Stormzy and Maya Jama in the smoking area of another Vice party. People thought Vice was cool and wanted to be associated with it.
You know, for all these legacy media organizations, these big media organizations looking on that, how did they respond?
They threw money at Shane Smith like he was the second coming of Christ. They could not open their checkbooks and write checks fast enough. I think in 2012, Rupert Murdoch tweeted about Vice being this wild, interesting effort to interest millennials who don't read or watch established media. So Murdoch invested, Disney invested. They were getting hundreds of millions of pounds, and actually Shane thought that it wasn't enough. He famously turned down offers for more money because he thought the company was actually undervalued. There was a feeling that Vice had cracked millennials and that Vice knew how to advertise to millennials like no one else did. Like TV didn't, newspapers didn't, but Vice had these eyeballs. And as a result, Vice just took in so much money. I think it was 400 million from Disney. It just started spending money at an unbelievable rate. So all these new websites are launched, offices everywhere. I mean, we had offices everywhere. I'd be at my desk and I'd be like, there's a Vice office in Serbia. I had no idea. We launched a beer company, production studio. We obviously had an advertising agency. And I guess most famously of all, we launched a TV channel.
Vice News Tonight.
We're seeing this whole revolution.
The next generation of news.
Even if you trust the government today, what happens when it changes?
Journalism without the... So it was in 2016 that TV channel launched. What was behind that decision, right? At a time when everybody else is looking to social media, why would Vice go to TV?
I'm laughing because it's so ridiculous. They launched a 24-hour satellite channel. The amount of money involved in, first of all, launching a TV channel, but then also doing a nightly live show for 2 hours is just unbelievable. And I was there when they launched Viceland. And I remember thinking, is this it? Like, is this how people are making money now? Like, watching live TV? I thought people were moving away from that. I thought it was all about streaming in Netflix and catch up on your phones. I didn't think millennials wanted to stay in and watch TV. Look, it was a colossal catastrophe. They cancelled the live show after a month and a half. Eventually, Viceland got taken off air, which was the TV channel. But there was this feeling, and I think Shane was actually just so good at just presenting himself as the savior of digital media and the way to get advertisers to connect with millennials. I think he was so good at that, and he was so good at his own publicity that a lot of people with a lot of money really believed in him and backed him to do these vainglorious projects that in retrospect seem so obviously like they were going to fail.
When did things really start to go wrong?
I would say from 2017 onwards is when the company entered a protracted and gruesome death spiral. And it was layoffs every 6 months. I think the first kind of cataclysm that took place was when Facebook announced that it was going to be deprioritizing content from publishers in the newsfeed. So basically, if you went on your Facebook feed, instead of seeing a Vice or another publisher's article, you would see stuff from your family and friends. And overnight, that just destroyed the traffic to the website. It was like turning off a tap. And so that was one of the sort of first real, like, oh, this is bad. But the company had taken so much money and it could not meet the expectations of its investors. The business model wasn't working and we had our fingers on all these different pies. But digital media I think as we now know, because when we look back at all the companies that existed around then, which are no longer with us, like BuzzFeed, you know, the Owl, Hairpin, the Debrief, all of these different websites that no longer exist anymore, digital media was never that profitable. It just wasn't.
What was it like to work there at that point?
So from 2017 onwards, everything just started to tank. Working somewhere where every 6 months to a year, there's a brutal round of layoffs, and it seems completely random and arbitrary. Colleagues of yours are being laid off that are so talented and hardworking, and they're being treated with such disrespect by management as well in the process. You'd get these emails and it would be like, oh, we're doing such great work. Everything is so amazing. Unfortunately, we're laying off 10% of the office. And then you'll just get that every 6 months.
Coming up, why did Vice end up going bankrupt?
Maybach, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
In Norway, a woman's boyfriend forgets who she is overnight. In Detroit, a man is arrested, but he was never at the crime scene. In Spain, disturbing pictures of young girls have appeared, and no one knows who's behind them. Something strange is happening. A collision between people and artificial intelligence. Discover more in The Guardian's new series, Black Box. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. All episodes out now.
Sam, in 2017, the New York Times published awful allegations from Vice staff about what had been happening at the company. Just tell me about those.
There was this New York Times article that came out, and it talked about a kind of culture of old school sexual harassment at the company. And a lot of it was in the US offices, but some of it was in the UK office. And it just was like a very horrible set of allegations, but also it was a horrible time to work there. You know, I think that the company wasn't particularly good at reassuring people about their own internal investigations into what was going on. A lot of the allegations involved, you know, the senior people at the company. And so it was hard to feel like you could trust that they weren't kind of more concerned with protecting themselves than actually finding out everything that had happened.
Let me give you a look at the statement, Lindsay. This is from Shane Smith and Suresh Alvi. They are the co-founders of Vice. Cultural elements from our past, dysfunction and mismanagement were allowed to flourish unchecked. That includes a detrimental, quote, boys club culture that fostered inappropriate behavior.
I think with a lot of that stuff, the tone really changed and it made it more difficult to work there. You know, personally speaking, one of the people who came forward after that article came out was one of my closest friends. And she, you know, her allegations, she felt like were not being handled seriously. She felt she was kind of being managed by the company. And so that, I think, just left a particularly bitter taste.
Vice Media was once one of the hottest names in new media. They've just filed for bankruptcy protection ahead of a proposed deal to sell off to a consortium of lenders. It's an extraordinary collapse. Just a few years ago, they had a multi-billion dollar valuation, as investors look to...
So you left in 2018, and over the last 6 years, there's been round after round of redundancies. Last year, Vice Media actually went bankrupt. How did things get that bad?
I think that ultimately it was the hubris that got them, because even without all of that, they had so many people there making huge amounts of money. You know, like one thing that is amazing about Vice is there was sort of 8 tables of people making money for every 1 table of people making content. You know, a lot of people who were working there were working for its white label advertising studio, which is, means that they were making Vicey style videos for brands. And you know, they had a system and it was working. They could have very easily become the place that sold its documentaries to Netflix and to the streamers and become an amazing production house. And I think this desire for them to be the empire themselves, coupled with the kind of ongoing tarnished reputation, just made it really difficult.
Shirin, do you think that if the bosses of Vice hadn't run the company the way that they did, that it would have survived? Or was it something that captured the zeitgeist that really effectively appealed to a generation, millennials, who are now no longer so young and appealing?
It's a million-dollar question, and I think that other people will answer that in the fullness of time. My own personal position is that it's incredibly difficult to make money from digital media. But that said, Vice was there at the beginning. It had incredible journalists. It is a huge global brand. And it had that incumbent advantage. Like it was the first of its type of publication, right? Like there were so many things that Vice missed. Like why did Vice never really get into podcasting in a big way, or newsletters, like all these different really profitable revenue streams that have emerged in publishing recently? Like Vice never touched any of those things. I don't know whether there's an alternate universe in which Vice could have survived. What I do know is that many of the decisions that I witnessed there from a business point of view were catastrophic. Money was just hemorrhaged on ideas that a 5-year-old would have been able to tell you were stupid. And for me, what really sticks in the craw is that all the people who make those decisions are going to walk out of this absolutely fine. They're going to be absolutely fine. Whereas I know that the people who went in there every single day and did amazing journalism and worked really, really hard are going to struggle in some instances to find another job because our media landscape is not super great right now. You know, I know people have been laid off on maternity leave. I know people who've been laid off in the US while going through serious health issues. And those people may not be fine. And it just feels very unfair. I hope that I'm making myself clear when I say that I'm critical of the senior execs that drove the company into the ground. I will always have so much gratitude for what that company did for me in my career, towards the people that I worked with on a day-to-day basis who were all great, because I know that I would not be sitting here if it wasn't for them.
Shirin, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
That was Shirin Kahle. If you want to hear more about her time at Vice and what went wrong with the company, she's written about it at theguardian.com. Sam Wolfson, who you also heard, has done a couple of really interesting articles for the site recently. He got a rare interview with Kim Gordon of Sonic Youth fame about her new album and her politics. And he's also done a piece about why every celebrity's got their own podcast now. That's it for today. I'm Hannah Moore. This episode was produced by Lucy Hoff and sound designed by Solomon King. The executive producer was Elizabeth Cassin. See you tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.